Blog Talk Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts. The foremost authority on 9/11, the best-selling author of Methodical Illusion, and a researcher extraordinaire, Rebecca Roth is about to step up to the microphone and launch into Reality Check, where the light will shine brightly upon the truth.
Live from New York, it's Saturday evening, starring Rebecca Roth. And this evening's guest host, Ramjet. Well, kiddo, you made it to the big time.
Hey, New York, New York, home of Donald Trump. I've always loved New York. I forgot how good it is.
Lauren Michael called and said, we got this new show Saturday evening, and you're it, first guest.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the Rebecca Roth Show. It is just a pleasure to share some time with you, and always fun to pull out of writing my next novel and come back to reality. And so this is a reality check for me, really. And I just can't tell you what it is. And when you get involved with these characters and you start building them, it is really kind of fun. And they take on a life of their own. And then you have to edit them a little bit. They don't like it. But yeah, when you come back to reality, they're not with you anymore, except sometimes they are. Sometimes I dream about what they're doing. What are they going to do next?
It's unfortunate that we don't have this on video, because people could see you writing with both hands and editing with both feet. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of fun. I'm working as fast as I can. You can hear my voice is a little bit whacked out again. Hopefully I'm not going to get sick again, but man, that pneumonia really knocked me for a loop. So I am behind schedule. I'm hoping this third book does come out in June. It should all come together relatively quickly. It's looking good. I've just checked with not the artist yet, but I have the artwork for the cover already in my head. So just, my artist is so good at putting it together. But yes, everything looks good for sometime in June, and we'll let you know. Of course, I'll post it out on my Facebook page, my author page, and my personal page, and in the Facebook group, which is called The Real Rebecca Roth. In order to get in there, you have to be my Facebook friend, and or you have to be friends with somebody that's in there, and they let you in. It's a, what do they call it, a secret group. Not really secret, but we try to keep it an educational. I share all the information that I have, and I'll be posting some things in there at the launch, I think, of the next book. So I know there'll be a little bit, some spoilers, but these are some things that I want to get put out in public. So I'm going to do probably some screenshots of some stuff that I found. And let me just tell you how this is working. The other night, actually it was yesterday morning, I had a dream, and inside the Freedom of Information Act and all the data that I have from 9/11, these files have numbers, certain numbers, like number one and then a space, AWA, capital letters, and then a number. I woke up and I kept seeing this in my mind. And so I went into the external hard drive, and I was looking at all of these one AWA files, and there's quite a few of them. And lo and behold, somebody brought me a message, and it is just so amazing. You know, I just recently have been chatting a bunch with an American flight attendant, and we were talking about how absurd the story was about Betty Ong. And so before I go any further about the predictive programming stuff, let me just say this, because I think you need to know this. Remember that Betty Ong kept saying she was at 3R, her jumps, and they're usually from the cockpit numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And she kept saying, I'm at my jump seat 3R. When she was asked what is her seat, the reservations woman, of course, thought she was a passenger. And then when she figured out, she was calling from a plane, she said, what seat are you in? And Betty Ong had this huge, long pause. She didn't know what she was supposed to say because they hadn't briefed her on that. So she said many times, probably six, she's in her jump seat at 3R. Well, here's some news for you. At the time of 9/11, the American Airlines, which she was on, 767, which she was on, did not have an airphone that reached the jump seat flight attendant at 3R. Okay, let that sink in for a second, because we were told Well, of course, reservations would have no way of knowing if she called from a cell or a airphone, because they asked her and the reservations agent said she didn't know what kind of phone she was using. And then the official story leads us to believe that she was calling from an airphone from the jump seat, she told us many times, at 3R. Now, this is one of the things that, as I was going through the stuff that Betty Ong herself said and didn't say and did and didn't do, which she should have to follow protocol. The fact that she kept saying that, I keep thinking, okay, she wanted someone like the American flight attendant that's just been chatting with me and myself to hear that she was not in a situation that was a real hijack, because she couldn't talk on an airphone from her jump seat. There was, I don't think it is now, but there was airphones on the 767 American Airlines at the time, but only the one left position, the flight attendant jump seat furthest away from her, up in first class, up right up by the cockpit, was the only flight attendant that could talk on an airphone from her jump seat. I don't know why they set that up, but I mean, when we had them, you couldn't talk from any jump seat with one airphone. They were just for passengers. So I think that's something that really needs to sink in, because Betty Ong was telling us something that she knew, if we knew American Airlines layouts and their protocols, that she couldn't be talking on an airphone from her jump seat. It had to have been somewhere else. And so when the handlers told her, whatever the story they gave them, you know, maybe you're on a drill and we're going to test the FAA or air traffic control system or the military response, and we want you to say you're in a hijacked aircraft. Well, they didn't give her all the details. So when the reservations lady asked her, what seat are you in? Well, she just reverted back to her work position, her jump seat 3R. Maybe she did that so we would know that it was something other than a real hijacking with real hijackers on board. Because the first thing they would have said is, we have a hijacker on board. His demand is blah. His weapon is blah. Fill in the blank. And she never said that. But what I found interesting about the whole 9/11 thing with the phone calls from the flight attendants that did not follow protocol and did the wrong stuff every time, called their spouse, called their parents, didn't say what kind of weapon, didn't say what kind of demands, didn't say anything, because we were all being told on the TV. So they didn't follow protocols because the monster that was behind this controls the media. So we were already being told all of the details that the flight attendants didn't tell. And then the media turned around and said, hey, these flight attendants did a great job. But if you listen to the Common Strategy show we did a couple months back, you'll see that none of the flight attendants followed protocol. As a matter of fact, they all broke protocol, and none of them said the most important thing. How did a hijacker get inside the cockpit, if in fact they were? Betty Ong only referred to the hijacker as one he. He stood upstairs. He is coming back from business. He has pepper spray or mace. See, she only referred to one. The official story has like four or five of hijackers in there, and they all vary. The official story varies all the time. So anyway, I just wanted to touch on that, because to me it's really important that you understand that. And what's happening for me is that flight attendants that were involved and working for the airlines involved directly in 9/11, we're all one big happy family. So if I want to borrow somebody's wings and name tag, it's easy to do. Or if I want to go to Australia, or if I want to go to North Carolina, it's really easy to do because I have this gigantic family around the world. And so they email me and are in contact with me. And I've told you this before. When something happens, and this is one reason I laid it out in Methodical Illusion this way, so you understand. When something happens at one airline, it affects us all, like we're a giant family or a huge sorority. Or I guess a family is just the best way to explain it, because it isn't just sorority of girls. It's everyone. It's the flight attendants. It's the pilots. It's the ground people and the mechanics. And people have come forward to me from that giant family, from United, from American, from other airlines that saw or heard and did things on that day that have been very, very helpful in putting all of the pieces of the puzzle together. So that being said, what we want to talk about today is 9/11 in hindsight. And when I say that, I'm like, when we look back now, 15 years or 8 years, 10 years later, after 9/11, we saw with 2020 vision the predictive programming. Didn't we all see that? I mean, there's YouTubes out about the predictive program. There's blogs. There's all kinds of stuff. Someone in Hollywood must have known 9/11 was going to happen. Looked like it.
Yeah, my favorite is when I think it's on Terminator 2 or Terminator 1. I don't know. I can't remember which. Under the bridge. The bridge is 9 feet 11. No bridges are 9 feet 11. You can barely get anything through there.
And in the Matrix, Neo is Neo, right? From the Neo,
yeah.
From the Matrix. His passport date of birth was 9/11.
Yeah.
There was so
the
many.
Simpsons.
Yeah, the Simpsons and the magazine, with the $9 and then the towers being the 11 next to it on the cover. I mean, we did a show a long time ago about this. That it's just amazing. So what we want to do is kind of help you start to see what's being happened, because you can see it's been 15 years now, and it's whether it's a war or false flag or the Gulf of Tonkin, it seems like about every 20 years or so we get nailed by something.
Well, you're starting to get predictive programming now for the next event, whatever
that
is. And if you can see it, you can prepare for it.
That's right.
Because we know that's the pattern. That's the MO that they always operate under.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, last show I talked about, you know, I'm a big prepper, and I know that a lot of people are, you know, financially hit from what's happened to our economy over the last 8 or 9 years. And I have been there too. So I started prepping when I didn't have a lot of cash. So I'm really trying to put together, and I may even end up just doing a radio show about it, just so you can get ready. Because I just think time is short. And so I'm feeling really compelled to get this information out. I want to do an ebook, so because I've got some really cool information that you can, you know, use it right away. And so maybe I'll just do, you know, short ones, really, you know, a couple bucks a piece or something, get them out there.
That's if you ever finish this third book.
Yeah, well, it's almost
now
done.
I know that you met last week with somebody from packaging that will put the three books together, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. And so I will do, a lot of people have asked for this too, autographed books in a three-book set. So the new book will be out there with the other two, and we'll put it in the store at a great price. And yes, I am working with a box company to put it in like a little sleeve, so they'll all sit together. You can put, you don't need bookends that way. You can just kind of put them on your shelf. And so those come out, and hopefully it's all. That's why I say I can't give you a date, because I'm waiting on the box guy to make sure that's the box I want. Waiting for the protocol to come, or the protocol. The what do you call that? That first one they give you, the proof.
Prototype.
Prototype,
proof.
Yeah. Prototype, the proof box. And once I give them the go-ahead, then I'll get a date to see how long it takes to get how many boxes and all that jazz. And it'll all come together just like a
and you got your information from your editor back. That was nice.
Yes, that's really.
So that's all in the works.
It's all coming together. It's
we
a
just
lot
need
of
to
stuff.
Get those two hands and two feet working faster.
I know, it's crazy. And plus, you know, like we said last week, I am still digging through. I mean, when I get a dream like that with a file name like that in my head, when I wake up and I'm seeing that in my mind's eye, I'm like, oh, my goodness. I wrote it down, and I just went and made myself a latte. And
and it's a non-writing day. It's a research day.
It becomes a research day, maybe a writing night, or maybe a research night, too, because there's just so much stuff. I mean, I just keep uncovering stuff. And then I'm just trying to figure out how to put it all in this last book, because I want to move on to a different subject matter after this, I hope. But it just kind of keeps opening doors. We'll see what happens. Anyway, so one of the things that I want to help you see is stuff what happens to me. And so you can start seeing, and you really do need to be prepared, especially if you're in a major United States city. And last time, I'm going to say it again, on our YouTube channel, there is a YouTube called Could This Be the Next False Flag? All the details are in there. That was written about in The Methodical Illusion. It is real. The cities were not named. They were not named in the article that I read out of Ynet News. That was quickly scrubbed from the internet. And when I read it out loud, luckily to my husband, I said, when I found out it was scrubbed hours later, I said that was a message for someone, kind of like the Odigo text message that out of Israel that you can read about in the Haaretz newspaper, and it's kind of all over. The Odigo text message service from Israel had sent text messages to people that worked in and near the towers on 9/11 2 hours prior, supposedly hitting the towers, to not go to work, and they didn't. And so people ask, well, how come not very many Jewish people were killed that day? Well, that would be helpful. And then another thing I want to bring up to your attention, I just brought this into my own mind. You have to ask yourself this. If ISIS is such a concern, and they're such radical Islamic lunatics, and they're a four-hour drive from Israel, why are they not killing Jews? Now, you got to ask yourself another thing. If there was an attack here and it was blamed on ISIS, who is ISIS? You want to look into some people like that Eric Prince that started Blackwater. Blackwater. It's gone on to become three different names. You'll remember that he was in some legal matters, and Blackwater was busted for murdering civilians in Iraq. And some real dirty, black, nasty stuff. And he is a CIA character, gone rogue, and he started a mercenary group of people just a couple years ago, coincidentally. When we first started hearing about ISIS with their 800 strong, he had just trained 800 Somalis in Somalia to supposedly fight the pirating in the Gulf of Aden, which we never ever hear about now. And that was just a big deal. But that was a deal so that he could... His Blackwater and those black monsters that are involved, and just read the board of directors and look up this company, Eric Prince and Blackwater, and then you can find out what it's called now. It went on to become Akamai or something like that, Academi, and then it went on to XE or something. It's had three or four names since it started. His history is pretty interesting as well. Billionaire's son. That joined the CIA with George H.W. Bush and went and see starting all these mercenaries. Well, you're seeing it right now. So when we get struck again in this country, which any day now could happen, it could possibly be what I read in the Ynet News that was instantly scrubbed, 5 or 6 major cities over a 9-day period. Now, that mentioned... The anniversary of Osama bin Laden's Navy SEAL team death in 2011, I think. Was it 11? I think so. Which we know didn't happen because we know that Warfan's disease, a kidney disease he had, I can't remember the name of it now, took him out in December of 2001. Remember the Pakistani prime minister was on Fox News and Charlie Rose and talking about that. It's all over the media. You can go look it up. There's some stuff on YouTube about her. And she was assassinated within weeks of saying that, coincidentally. So anyway, what we want to bring to your attention is, how is the media laying the trap for your mind so that you'll instantly blame a bunch of Muslims from a bunch of countries because they want to have more war? And you can see this now also when you just read the headlines of how they're laying it out there. So when they go back after the supposed attack, they can say, well, here, look at this. So let me just kind of tell you. Do you have something you want to add there, Ramji?
Well, you know, I'm
Skittles.
The
Skittles.
Guest host. Where are my Skittles?
Well, I have a box of Skittles for you, too. So here's a headline I just want to kind of read to you. That just came out the other day. It came out on the 23rd of April. This is the kind of headline you want to pay attention to because this shouldn't happen in America. Train arrives in Detroit, missing 32 cases of explosives. Federal agents are interviewing people in southwest Detroit about 32 cases of commercial-grade explosives that were stolen from us. Workers realized that about 500 pounds of the explosives were missing when the train arrived on Wednesday near Central Avenue, and Donald Dawkins, a spokesman for the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. You got to ask yourself this. They had obviously more than 500 pounds on the shipment, on a train going through a major city in the United States without any protection, without any security. There's no cameras. There's no special locks, no nothing. Somebody wanted this headline to be able to be printed, didn't they? I mean, you just have to look at this. Because there's no excuse for this guy here, Dawkins. What did I say his first name was? Donald Dawkins. Sounds like Donald Duck. He acts like Donald Duck. Okay, so how can he possibly explain this? Because if you sit down for one moment and just use logical thinking, if you were the federal government and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, you have control of this stuff. How can you let this happen?
Well, what's interesting to me is that you will never hear about this again.
No.
I mean, whether it was really stolen, whether it wasn't stolen, whether they find it, whether they don't, the important part of this whole aspect was to get the headline out so that they can refer back to it at a later date. And you'll never know what happened because nobody cares what happened about this. That's not the story. The story is...
when it blows up, they'll care, right? Remember that freight train? They'll pull this up and show you on TV. Hey, this is what happened in April.
But you won't hear about, you know, police doing investigation or ATF looking into this or blah, blah, blah. That's it. It's the headline. That's all they care about.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, it goes on to say that the Detroit... Now, keep in mind that the Detroit area, lots of the cities around Detroit, have a huge population of Muslims. Boom. That's why. It didn't happen in Chicago, but the train left from Chicago.
But that's not germane to the story unless you're trying to do some kind of predictive
programming. But they'll pull that out later. They'll pull that out later because we all know this, okay? All right, so the train did depart from Chicago. Now, we talked about Chicago being one of those cities, right? So we got Chicago. We got Detroit here. We got 500 pounds of explosives. It doesn't tell us what kind. But it says the explosives, and now here again, now this is a controlled substance by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. The explosives likely were among various types of freight, including consumer products and raw materials, on a train with about 100 boxcars, so says the spokesman for the CSX train company. So, and he also says that they're cooperating with the, but they have no way of knowing if it's in if it's in Detroit or it stopped on one of its many stops along the way between Chicago and Detroit. And so we don't know where it went, but 500 pounds of explosives. Now, remember, there was someone speculating a few years back, maybe a conspiracy theory, maybe not, maybe someone that had a little inside knowledge, that there was a potential for these supposed terrorists, that we know who they are. They're the same people who did 9/11. You don't have to go very far. Read the books. You'll find out who they are. They have access to this kind of stuff because this is the federal government that should have been protecting us from this, just like on 9/11. Okay? So who's running the... You want to take a look at this. Who's running the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives? Who is that guy? Because that guy's running the show right now. We have enough explosives out there to blow up every bridge in, in any area of the country. Or maybe buildings or whatever. But 500 pounds of explosive missing. Nobody seems to care. I've never read another thing, and I do keep my eyes on the news. And I do it for this reason. Because they're setting the stage. We got to tell them, how did the terrorists get here? Well, they're coming over the southern border, and we are not only not doing anything about it, but if a border patrolman wants to do something about it, or Sheriff Joe Arpaio, we'll launch a federal attack on that person and his family and their union and whatever. Because we want that southern border to be left wide open, because just the other day, let me open this one up, and this is, this is how it works. The director of the National Intelligence, James, I think his name is James Clapper, he says this, ISIS, and we know who they are, and Al-Qaeda, spelled new, new spelling, could strike the United States before the U.S. election because, you know, there isn't one ISIS terrorist that wants Donald Trump to win now, right? What the heck does our election have to do with them? They don't want the status quo? They don't want us bombing over there? What do you think? I mean, stop for a minute and use some logical thinking, but listen to what that headline just told you. This is the guy who says that terror groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda, which we know we've decimated, but they're back. You can say right here, they're back. Could launch attacks within the United States to affect the presidential campaign this November. The director of national intelligence, James Clapper, has told the Newsmax.
Now, is this the James Clapper that lied to Congress?
Yeah, that's the same man.
And never had any repercussions at all for that?
Exactly.
Nobody called him on the carpet. Nobody prosecuted him. I mean, it's against the law to lie to Congress. And he does it on a regular
all the
basis.
Time. Yeah, yeah. This is he's absolutely clueless. But go to Wikipedia at least. Go somewhere and look up his biography. Because that's what you want to do to learn about these people. When you see them, these are the people who planned 9/11. And these are the people that made sure you thought it was 19 Arabs, 10 of which are still alive. Clapper goes on to say that Clapper, the top official in the United States intelligence community. Now, he's a head of the CIA and everything, DIA, everyone. He is not an intelligent person. He's a puppet. He would not say whether the terrorist groups preferred or opposed any particular candidate. Well, really? Why would they? I mean, maybe they want to keep Obama in power. Maybe they want to do a false flag so we don't have an election. Is that what they want to do? They like what what Obama's doing over there? Are they happy with being bombed periodically and with white phosphorus being thrown in at Gaza and all of the stuff that's ongoing for the last 8 years, Mr. Peace Prize President? I mean, really, do you think the terrorists are happy with what's been going on for the last 8 years? I don't think so. But somebody has a plan to disrupt our election. Now, why would they do that? Because they can't get their puppet in because they've got this, what should we call him, outsider, this guy they can't control, a self-made billionaire.
A populist.
A populist that wants to put America first. And one of the things the elite, these are the people that pulled off 9/11 and created all the wars, look up the Project for a New American Century. This is what they want to destroy, is your national pride. And they've done a pretty damn good job, I have to say.
Well, it's not just national pride. I mean, it's worldwide. It's
nationalism.
In
nationalism.
General.
There's only one country that is allowing nationalism, and it's a Zionist country in the Middle East called Israel. That's the only one it's okay for them.
But
you Germany, everywhere.
Yeah, you look at what's going on in Europe and the fact that they have basically neutered the German ancestry, the German history, the German nationalistic tendencies, and the Spanish, and the French, and the Finnish, and the Norwegian, and the Swedish, and it's all done in order to
destroy the nationalism of that nation
and weaken these countries as a whole so that they can have control over all of them.
Exactly.
And it's happening in the United States.
Yes,
I mean,
southern border.
What did I read the other day? That 38% of the millennials think capitalism is good. In other words, you know, you've got the rest of them.
60+%
Yeah,
think
62%.
What, communism, Marxism is good?
Socialism is the way they want to go
with
that. And why is that? Because they don't know about what this country is all about, how it's been built, and what, you know, are the foundational pillars that hold it together. And it isn't socialism.
Yes, the perpetrators have infiltrated the education system, and that was a prime example. But let me go on to just share a little bit more about James Clapper. This is kind of interesting. At a Washington, D.C. press breakfast hosted by the Christian Science Monitor, Newsmax, reporter asked Clapper if he felt ISIS or Al-Qaeda was targeting the U.S. before the election with the possibility of influencing the election's outcome. Now, quote, here comes Clapper, whether or not they might do something that might have a bearing on the election, well, they could, particularly if they do something in this country, Clapper replied. It would probably have some impact. It's kind of an imponderable, but it could certainly influence how people vote in this election. You can see that's what's happening here. The elite are trying everything they can do to discredit Donald Trump because they don't control him. This is John F. Kennedy come back to save America right here. That's my opinion. You can turn off the show right now if you don't have that opinion, if you can't handle opinions that aren't yours. But that's it's my show and my opinion. I observe stuff. I saw what Kennedy said and did and where he wanted to take this country right before they killed him. Same perpetrators of 9/11. This is all connected. And the thing that blew my mind the most, as an American, as someone who believed the official story about 9/11 until I found 10 of the hijackers alive, I was most blown away when I started digging into this whole thing and who did what, the Project for a New American Century, all of those people who signed it and planned the wars in the Middle East, and the whole thing, every step of the way, I kept reverting back to the same players from the Iran-Contra, from all of the stuff we heard about in the SunTrust, BCCI, all of the CIA banks, HSBC, I think it's called, and all of those CIA drug laundering, money laundering banks, the drugs for arms, stuff that Gary Webb tried to tell us about in the 80s, all of that heroin from the Middle East now filling our tiniest little towns in America. This is the stuff that Trump wants to stop, is the drug flow. Well, where is it coming from? It's coming from the CIA, the DEA. Remember the DEA? Now, they're very involved. And one thing that blows me away, reading through the FOIA documents on 9/11, is the involvement to not just the FAA. Of course, we'd know that's air traffic control. They'd be involved, right? No, the FBI was on campus, man, at the airlines, and I've had people call me from operations and tell me immediately. The FBI was immediately in Shanksville, when they came out of Pennsylvania an hour and 45 minutes or so away. They were immediately at the operations center shutting down American Airlines big room, the operations. They were immediately everywhere. They immediately took the 85 cameras off the Pentagon and around the businesses from the Pentagon immediately. They also did the same thing by pulling these tapes. Now, we found, looking at the meta tag, that a lot of the supposed conversations and the terrorist voices and all of that stuff. Remember, the word terrorist was never used in FAA and aviation ever before 9/11. So he would have been called a hijacker. He wouldn't have been called a terrorist. But they tagged him at 6:37 in the morning and uploaded that an hour and a half before the planes pushed back. How did they do that? Did they know? Are they psychic? How did they upload a wave file? How did they upload a phony radar file before the plane pushed back to tell us where it was flying to and around?
Maybe they watched The Simpsons.
Hey, that could be. That might be what they did. So when I start to look at this stuff, I see the FBI and the DEA. Now, if you read The Methodical Deception, the DEA played an interesting role because prior to 9/11, about a year to a year and a half prior to 9/11, some astute DEA employee, I believe he was the guy who started this, was a DEA employee. I sure would love to hear from him. I'm going to ask the universe right now to just let him email me. Because this guy was stopped by the people above him or someone that was running the Department of Justice. And one of the deputies, a deputy attorney general at that time, was Eric Holder. So maybe it stopped with Eric. Who knows where it went. But he got stopped. He had a 60-page report. And in that report, and there's a lot of it that I link to from the website methodicaldeception.com. You can just look up the Israeli art students that were in the towers and then just go from the resource page all the way through and read about these guys. And you're going to see one link on the lower right-hand side. I think it's the second page of the resources, and there's probably five pages there. It says DEA report, and you're going to read it. And at the very back, it's 60 pages. There's about 125 Israelis that are listed with their date of birth. Some of them have their height. The thing that I found really interesting is that this guy was stopped, and more than a dozen, not everyone got interviewed because they just, you know, they just reported that these Israeli art students had been in their federal office. This is for U.S. Marshals, IRS, the ATF, FBI. I mean, they were finding these people's homes and their offices that were not made public. But prior to this, we had Jamie Gorelick, who was in Eric Holder's position, and Jamie Gorelick sat on the 9/11 commission hearing. Interesting. So we've got this weird connection here, and nobody wants to look at these guys. But as I'm reading through this report again just the other day, because other things are connecting to them, besides the gelatin art group that was living in the World Trade Center towers, I'm reading that through that again, and there are over a dozen Israeli Defense Force Special Operations, remember 9B, American Flight 11, Daniel Lewin. He was Sayeret Matkal. He was a Special Operations. Now, it doesn't say they were Sayeret Matkal, it just says they're Special Ops. But Daniel Lewin was, right? Now, they said Daniel Lewin's friends all said he could kill any human being with a pen and a credit card. So these guys are pretty tough. They're Special Operations guys. There were Israeli intelligence, that is known as the Mossad. Now, we found lots of Mossad connections, the Urban Movers Front Company, Zim Shipping, all kinds of connections to Mossad front companies after we started to look with the eyes that could see after 9/11. That 2020 vision, we looked back and went, wow, well, you get to a point where there's no more coincidences. But there were even women involved as the traveling art students that were bomb explosive specialists from the IDF. Okay? Now, just think about that. Why would that not concern you as an American? And why did this guy's boss stop the report? It was a growing report. They got 60 pages and then it was stopped. Now, I've got an email from people that were in Guam. Now, there isn't much in Guam. I've been there because when I first started flying, we were doing some refugee charters from Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. And the refugee camps were put up in Guam. So I've been there several times.
Now, that's the country that Jeffrey says if you get too many people on,
the island will tip over. Yes.
Okay.
Who was it that said that?
Congressman Jeffries.
I couldn't believe it, having been there. But I got an email from someone that had been in Guam. And if I remember correctly, it was 2009, 2010 or something, that these traveling Israeli artists were there. And there's like, I don't know, four bases. I mean, basically Guam is a military base. And it's a really important military base, too. I can't tell you right now because I've had some conversations with some people that are very involved with some of the stuff. We have some extremely high-tech and extremely important stuff that goes on around Guam on the bases that are there in that area. So we have these Israelis trooping around the entire world on our military bases. So this one astute DEA guy thinks this is really weird because he started interviewing them and getting others to interview them and find out their background was IDF. These guys were almost all in their early 20s. They were from, like, say, 20, 21 years old up to maybe 30 because most of them have a date of birth attached to this. So if you haven't read that DEA report, when you read that and you finish reading that, you're going to see some names. Coincidentally, there's a name, same last name there as Alana Avraham of Israel. She worked for Applied Materials. Remember, we talked about Applied Materials. They were a company, Israeli company, that Wilmer Cutler and Pickering, which is another law firm that Jamie Gorelick worked at also, besides Barbara Olson. They were the law firm that, Gray was his name, I believe, that was the White House counsel for H.W. Bush. One of their attorneys was the hanging Chad guy that gave the election to Bush Jr. And they're very connected with Barbara Olson, with 9B, Daniel Lewin's company. They were his legal company representative as well. So you see, when you see all this stuff, well, you got this gal, her last name is Abraham. Maybe it's like Jones and Smith over there. But coincidentally, and I had read that she had a brother that was in the IDF, coincidentally, one of the gentleman that was arrested in the United States, picked up by the DEA and one of the federal agents that started looking at these art students, most of which were Mossad, many of which were ordnance, bomb, explosive specialists. One was considered a, hold on to your hat, a demolition expert. Now, I'm going to say that again. You think about what you saw Building 7 do, and what you saw wasn't a pancake collapse of the towers. This guy was a demolition expert. Wow. I read through that again the other day, and I thought, now, how could any American in their right mind? Well, this guy was collecting the data. It was someone above him in the Department of Justice that stopped this report, and then they belittled him. Yeah, that's what they do. That's what they do. That's what they've tried to do to me. But they're not going to stop me. They absolutely are not going to stop me. I'll have to be a drone strike before they stop me. But that's what they do. They try to discredit. And they tried to discredit this man. And he's the only person in the thing wrong. And what was he pointing at? The Israeli Defense Forces, the Israeli intelligence, the Mossad, and all of these people. One of the characters that they arrested had been a bodyguard. Listen carefully. To the highest-ranking general in the Israeli Defense Forces. So he had a high top security job now, didn't he? And so when he got done doing that, what did he do? He decided to go to America and sell these $8 paper prints from China to federal agents and their wives at their homes and offices for $100, $25, $150. Yeah. That's what he tried to do. That's what he was doing. That's what he got caught doing. And when they come here, they're on a tourist visa, and it's not legal to work when you're on a tourist visa and not make money. So they caught these guys. They have nearly $100,000 on them often. And so you'll read it. It's the DEA report, and you'll find it off the methodicaldeception.com page. And I talk a lot about it in the Methodical Deception book because it's all real connected. And it's real connected to people that are above the agent, the DEA agent, his boss and above, that stopped the investigation. So, anyway, I'll kind of go on and on about that because it's just a thorn for me. But here's another headline I just want to share with you because we're talking about this predictive programming stuff. Here's a real kicker for you. Foreign, dirty bomb responders will start training in Nevada. Now, it's interesting to me because I remember reading this saying, well, foreign, well, who are they? Who are they if they're foreign? And you know what? I remember this article didn't lay out who they were, but they're somebody from a foreign government. Oh, guess who? I bet they are. Ah, well, maybe they're artists. Maybe they're art students traveling to try to get money. By the way, you don't have to pay for college in Israel. We pay for their college. It's free. It goes part of their funding that we give them every year. But this is from the Las Vegas Review Journal, and it was dated on April 24th. So you can see just in this few days, we have these foreigners that are over here teaching our first responders how to react to a dirty bomb. Let that sink in for a second. Because if you read Methodical Illusion, you know what they're talking about. Biological, chemical, and nuclear. Okay, over a 9-day period was the plan. So if they do that, you're going to see martial law. And yeah, you're right. Clapper's right. They probably won't have an election. And maybe if they're lucky, they can get rid of people that they want to get rid of in the hubbub and the chaos of this multi-city attack that they have planned. So I guess, you know, one of the things I also read recently, and just in the last few months, was how many millionaires, maybe a couple billionaires, were leaving Chicago. Well, I wonder what religion they are. I think they're Muslim. I doubt it. You think they had an Odigo text message that said, hey, time to move. Get that property value while you can. I've always thought Chicago would be a city because Rahm Emanuel's father was a Mossad. He is an Israeli. So he's the mayor. So it'd be real easy to get in there and take out whatever they want. Remember also on 9/11, that guy Peter Hansen that we ended up finding out was a salesman. He was the vice president of sales for Time Trade, which is a DOD, Department of Homeland Security now, contractor. Their money off the United States government, insecurity, that sort of thing. The Department of Defense and Department of Homeland Security, veterans, blah, blah, blah. So remember he said that he thought the terrorists, I don't know why he thought this, other than someone told him, but he thought the terrorists were going to fly that plane, they were only about 5,000 feet elevation, into Chicago and into a building. Well, the terrorists, supposedly, that were supposedly on board couldn't even hardly speak English. So there's a little flaw there in his story. Somebody told him that story. But just so you understand this, the Chicago Sears Tower, now called the Willis Tower, also owned by Larry Silverstein, was evacuated that morning because it was a target. Also, I found something else that a lot of people probably don't know about. Shortly after 10, I'm going to say roughly 10:10, and the reason I'm saying roughly is because I have chronologies, 200 or so of them from the same day, and they all have a different time for everything that happened, including last night. I was just going through one, a new one. I printed out, and I was sitting in my lazy girl chair, and I was reading through this, and it shows at 10:38, American Airlines Flight 77 was still airborne. That's from the FAA. That's an hour after it hit the Pentagon. No kidding. So I'm looking at this stuff and I'm thinking, okay, well, this is it. That's interesting that you show this airplane airborne. So where was it? I guess we're not going to find out. But
not from them or not.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's just totally mind melding when I look at this stuff and they have all of these different times and all of these different scenarios. But anyway, around 10:20, the Secret Service, and I'd be willing to bet they have some sort of housing near Camp David, called CNN. This is in all kinds of documents I have, too. I'm going to have to print this one out. And reported that an airplane that said they thought was either Flight 93 or Delta 1984, the one that landed in Cleveland, crashed into Camp David. Now, why would the Secret Service, who absolutely had to have some sort of FBI or some sort of federal agencies protecting, Marines or something, protecting Camp David? It's not like it's just sit out there in the woods and anybody can just drop in. Why would they have called CNN to report an aircraft, commercial aircraft, crashing into the Camp David?
Was on the script.
It was on the script. And so what I think I'm seeing, quite possibly, is, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, knowing pilots the way I do, knowing flight attendants the way I do, and knowing the scenario that was going on the ground, the perpetrators got into a little bit of trouble because, remember, all eight of the pilots were military trained, which means they're trained to fight and they're trained in survival. And once they figured out that, oh, my goodness, these people had guns and this isn't a drill or whatever, they figured out that their lives were in danger, they started fighting back. At that point, they claim this came off Flight 93, but Flight 93 we know was already on the ground because we had Tom Burnett calling from his cell phone at 9:27, 1 minute before the plane supposedly was hijacked, according to the official story. So we have them there, and one of the pilots hit the microphone and said, Mayday. Now, that doesn't happen. Now, we had people already on cell phones. They could not have been at 42,000 feet, as reported by the government. They had to have been on the ground. They had plenty of time to get in to that reserve base, to get on the ground, to pull the people off the plane, to make the phone calls that so they could be heard, because they had to get the message out. They had that Flight 93, let's roll. Come on, we built our hero. That guy, remember, Todd Beamer, let's roll. His cell phone that kept making phone calls until 8:30 that night, magically. His boss at Oracle, oh, by the way, again, Oracle was also a client of Wilmer Cutler and Pickering. And Larry Ellison, the CEO of Oracle, somehow knew 12 hours before the FBI let the Let's Roll story come out public that he knew all about the Let's Roll story. How did Larry Ellison know that before it was made public? His wife didn't. Ted Beamer's wife didn't even know. So there's something strange going on here with Flight 93. But we did hear a mayday. And I think what happened, because all of this, I've got this timeline, all of this was happening because Flight 93 was late pushing back from Newark. They were stuck on the ground for about 40 minutes in traffic. That threw a little fly in the ointment. And then we had the Delta Flight 1989 that the FAA insisted was a hijack. While the flight attendants were serving breakfast, the captain was saying, this is not, we are not being hijacked. We're serving breakfast. There's, everything's good. But they forced them to land in Cleveland.
How odd is it that somebody calls you
and tells you you're being hijacked.
Instead of you calling them and saying,
exactly,
we've been hijacked.
That was kind of a reverse process. But the FAA headquarters at the FAA, remember Thomas Keene? The FAA and the Pentagon were making so many misstatements to the 9/11 Commission, they were thinking about an investigation to the FAA and also to the Pentagon. Interesting.
But they didn't have the guts to do it.
No, they didn't. But I
and
did.
That's where Rebecca Rock comes in.
I did, damn it. Man, I'll tell you, I'd love to sit down and have dinner with Jane Garvey and say, you know what, Jane? The jig is up. You have been busted. Because the truth is going to set the rest of this country free. When we look at 9/11 and we see now with hindsight, we now look at that Building 7 come down. What do we see? Oh, my goodness. I said the word just now talking about the Israeli guy. Demolition expert he was. Demolition. When we look at the buildings, we don't see jet fuel and an office fire that we heard the firefighters from the 77th or 76th floor, I believe is where they were, telling dispatch on the radio, and this is the last thing they said, this is an office fire, we'll have it knocked down in 10 minutes. It was nothing. And then, the minute those words came out their mouth, and I'm paraphrasing, but you can find it on YouTube, the minute he said that, the building exploded. And you'll remember the South Tower was the first one to fall. The South Tower was hit in the corner, and you'll remember seeing what I saw, that top 20 floors or so tipped over like it was going to fall on the street. Well, guess what I just found yesterday? I found a document by the FAA that says the top of the World Trade Center Tower has collapsed and fallen on the street. Got sucked back into that explosion, remember? Didn't everybody look at that and go, how in the hell did that happen? Because that big segment that was tipping over, which I thought, oh my God, it's all those people. And listen, Manhattan's really busy. I've been there. I've been down there a lot at that World Trade Center towers. It's a very busy street, and that's the first thing I thought of. Oh my God, all those people on the street down there, because there's always people on the street, and that the whole portion of the building's going to fall. It didn't. It got sucked back into that explosion, whatever caused the explosion we saw. But when you look at those videos and see airplane fuel and an office fire cannot make a building explode like that. So you have to ask, what the heck was that? What? And we're looking with hindsight. We want to help you look with eyes that can see forward now, because we're due. And we even have James Clapper here telling us just last week, you know, 6 days, 5 days ago, that ISIS is going to come in. Yet, we have the federal government refusing to help close down that southern border. They're refusing to.
Well, I mean, basically what they're doing is they're telling you who's doing it, how they're getting here, mm-hmm. and what they're going
to
do.
Exactly. So eyes to see, look forward. And that's why I want to talk, you know, maybe our next show, I'm going to just talk a little bit about you getting ready. Because first thing you got to know is you are being played just like we were on 9/11. So open your eyes, learn the truth, read Methodical Illusion. If you have family, you want to open up their eyes. Don't talk to them about it. Give them the Methodical Illusion. along with the protagonist Vera Hansen, because that's where I was. I could not believe our government would be a part of this, and they were. And I have documented proof that they were, and they probably hate me for it. But what they've done is they've hired all these shills to discredit and claim I wasn't a flight attendant. But the flight attendants all know, don't you? I know you're listening, and thank you for all the support and everything that you guys are doing and all the information you've brought in, the pilots, the flight attendants, air traffic controllers. I have been so blessed with so many great people that it makes the shills look like little dried up old little...
Prunes.
I almost said the T word, but prunes. And they're ridiculous. They're absolutely ridiculous in their claims. I mean, I'm a CIA agent, I'm a chemist, I'm a model, I'm a 20-year-old blonde, I'm a whatever. But anything but what I am me. I'm writing these books, and you are waking up, and that's the name of the game, and help wake up other people, because you need to get ready. And a lot of people that I talk to, they have that sense too, like I do. And you have eyes that see and ears that hear, and so you tap into these headlines. Tap in. That's what they do. And they say the same thing. We are on borrowed time. If you're not prepared, do it yesterday. If all you can afford is a big bag of oatmeal, get it in your house and get some water filled into any containers you have. Get yourself some tape where you can get yourself into a room. If you're in a major city, get prepared. If you're in a minor city, get yourself prepared. If you're out in the country, get yourself prepared. Beware that the same people who pulled off 9/11 are about to pull it off again. James Clapper just told us, and he's in on it. Okay? It's hard. It's a hard thing. That was my first big pill to swallow, was that the United States government could allow this or plan this or be a part of this. And when I read the project for New American Century, I had to read it several times, and the signers. I couldn't believe it. But it's real.
You know, but at the same time they're doing this, they're starting to do the diversion tactic with the Saudi document.
Yes.
And trying to prove the fact that these...
Divert is what they're doing.
Yeah, these Arabs, blah, blah, blah. But it's hilarious because they didn't exist. But they have a whole scenario behind what it was they were doing prior to 9/11.
Yeah, and why have they kept all that secret? There's no explanation for that. But what I've been told is... And this does not shock me, what I just told you earlier, that the footnotes in the 28 pages reflect Israeli Mossad involvement through and through. And so, of course, they're not going to make that public, are they? Because if they did, we'd all be called anti-Semites. So the truth, you know, I mean, it's the new hate speech. But, you know, when you keep finding stuff over and over and the same players over and over and over again, it's the truth, and you can't change it. So, you know, I choose to share it. You can choose to believe it or not. Or do your own research. I like that. I like people to do their own research. Well, shoot darn. Looks like we're running out of time, but we're going to kind of do another show probably next week about more of this stuff. And I've had so many emails from people say, please help us get ready. Let me just give you just a little bit of advice on some of the things that you should have stored away yesterday. Okay, so
you're going to do that now or in the next show?
No, we're running out of time now. So in the next show, we'll talk a little bit. I can't give them a lesson in a minute.
can this woman talk or can this woman talk?
It's too much information for 55 seconds. So, but we'll try to do that in our next show, and we'll talk about it, because really it's important that you're ready, not just physically ready with your food and your water, but emotionally ready and knowledge ready, so you really know. And if you're prepared, you can help others. And that's really the name of the game. We were hoodwinked about 9/11, and the media is still on board with the hoodwinkers. Okay? So on that, I will leave you, and we'll talk with you again next week. And,
I mean, all I have to say is, are we two wild and crazy 9/11 guys?
Exactly. And live from New York,
Saturday evening.
Saturday evening with Rebecca Roth. Thanks for joining us, and we will be with you again next week.